Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Children Come First with Dr. Daria Brzezinski. And as always, we have interesting guests. And for this month, we have legislators represented from the state of Pennsylvania. And today we have Representative Jess Stairs, who's the Majority House Leader on the Education Committee. He's the Chair of the Education Committee. And he's from Westmoreland County. Good morning, Representative Stairs.
Yes, good morning. It's nice to be with you this morning, and I'm looking forward to discussion with you regarding issues that talk about education and children in particular.
Representative Stairs, you represent Westmoreland County, which is basically a rural county. What are the different, well, let's talk a little bit about the Education Committee. How does it function, the House Education Committee? Because our constituents don't understand legislation for the most part and how it operates. And what's the process by which legislation takes place?
Well, we can, that can be quite thorough, and there's quite a bit to say about that. The committee system is really, in my experience, one of the more important parts of the of state government. I've been here a number of years, and the bills that are introduced, and certainly all pieces of legislation is identified by a bill number, and of course, a legislation can be derived from a school child or a constituent or a legislator or really anybody that has an idea that they think should be brought in front of the state government and, of course, enacted into a law. So the committee plays a very important process. The first thing is the speaker. Once a bill is drawn up, and of course we have a reference bureau that assists us to make it correct in many ways, the idea that someone may have, and it's presented into a bill form, and the speaker, who is the presiding officer of the House, would present that to the committees, and of course in our case, Education Committee. So any issue that pertains to teaching and students and education in general would come to our committee, and that begins the long process before it becomes a law of the Commonwealth. So it's a very important beginning, and certainly it's kind of a filtering place for legislation to move or to maybe not go any further than the committee system. So all members belong to committees, and I think they play a very important role in the government of Pennsylvania.
Now, we have volumes and volumes of legislation year after year after year, not just at the Education Committee, but at all levels. And by the way, I acknowledge all of you for the amount of information you have to filter in order to be able to bring a bill into existence. People just don't have any concept of how much information comes to you and that you have to filter and read and keep up on, and many members of the House are on many committees, not just one, so you have a great deal of information to filter before legislation is transpired. Now, with all the volumes of legislation, what do you feel should be the function of government with regard, we're going to do specifically education today since we're talking about children, you know, what is the dividing line between the responsibility at the school district level, at the IU level, at the superintendent's level, at the school board level, and at the legislative level? And let's just talk about the state for this matter. There, I don't know anyone who knows and can interpret the volumes of legislation. And I've heard the governor talk about, and the Department of Education talk about education needing to go back to the community. So how does legislation fare in all of this, and what are its boundaries?
Yes, that's a very important question, and I guess it depends who you talk to. You may get a different answer, and are they right or wrong? That's a matter of judgment. I think most Pennsylvanians feel that education is a state or local matter. and not a federal matter. Our Constitution of the Commonwealth, depicts the one of the roles of the General Assembly is for the education, and certainly how that's divvied up between the local school district and the state sometimes is a matter of contention. We firmly believe in local control, and certainly school boards being the local body to preside over that particular school district and to set the policies and so forth. And we refer to local control. We also refer to the state. So, some people feel that the state should be more dominant than the local. I think in Pennsylvania, as we compare to other states, we give the local authority quite a bit of power. The school boards are, compared to other states, have, I think, a lot of authority. I know many states, on a bond issue, for example, whether to buy textbooks or to build a new facility, they got to go in front of the voters. But in Pennsylvania, we have given that power to the school board to make those decisions. And I think compared to other states, we find that their state government is probably more dominant with regard to the school structure. In fact, many states, they have a countywide school district rather than a local school district. So the communities in Pennsylvania, I believe, have a lot more influence than most other states. Now, there's some will say that, the state should be even more minimal and more power to the locals. And, of course, you get the argument the other way around. I think the thing that really brings it to a head in many times is the fact that in the funding, and we refer to the term as mandates, and of course unfunded mandates, the state is able to pass statutes or laws, or through regulation for that matter, that would specifically say that the school districts across the Commonwealth must do this or must perform that. And of course the really contentious issue becomes when the state says, well, you must do this, but they either give inadequate amounts of money to pay for it or do not give any money at all. And, of course, you hear about the unfunded mandates becoming a major issue. I think looking back in recent years, the amount of unfunded mandates, although I'm sure are still coming out of Harrisburg, but they're much less reduced. And I think most members are very conscious of the fact that we don't want to put a stipulation onto the school district without adequate compensation for that. But if you go back a number of years, and probably one of the big items is special education. This was passed back in the 70s, and at one time the state was a very dominant player in funding special education. But particularly in the last 5 to 10 years, with the new form of the change in the funding, it's state is picking up a minority or like one third of the amount of money to fund it. So this has been a very grave concern of school districts, and certainly the resulting concern is from the taxpayers who must foot the bill, and they must do that through the property tax, which is unpopular at the least. And so this is one of the major items we're hearing, and I'm hoping that this year's budget, that certainly I'm not going to be idealistic and say we're going to completely address this, but I certainly hope that we can go a big step forward to addressing the funding issue with regard to, as it would be called, an unfunded mandate in the special education. So it's a, it's a big discussion item, the balance of power between the state and a local, but I think, a casual observer might look on the sidelines and say that the locals do have a lot of power compared to other states in Pennsylvania, but it still is a divisive issue.
To be fair to you, that handicap legislation came at the federal level, and then it came to the state level, and then it came to the local level. So it wasn't really, it's your you've now got to interpret this federal mandate on handicap legislation, and I know it's gotten way out of hand. We've had superintendents here on the program who have told us that they, although the State Department of Education says that they spend approximately $7,300, $7,600 per child that really doesn't tell you exact numbers, because it, sometimes they spend $60,000 to $100,000 per handicapped child, so that our most of our children are not benefiting from, you know, that average, so to speak, and it has nothing to do with necessarily what the state is. Now, is there a state formula, and what is that with regard to education with the handicapped?
Yeah, there is a state formula to the handicapped, and you know, it was prior to 1990, it was just kind of an excess cost. You know, whatever cost that the district incurred that they didn't have, they just passed it on to the state, and the state picked it up. So, as you could imagine, the state was running up hundreds of millions of dollars each year in extra costs. So, a new formula was derived. And to get a kind of a bearing on the monies here, and you kind of alluded to that slightly, you know, it's $6,000-$7,000 is probably an average amount, maybe a little less than that we'd spend in public education per student, probably a little less than that across the state. Special ed cost, you know, they average probably maybe $10,000 or $12,000, and I'm being very general. I'm not being specific here. And then you have certain special needs of a profoundly handicapped child that may have to go to approved private school or so, and you're talking maybe $50,000 plus. Fortunately, this is only a small number of students, but and I think your special ed population across the Commonwealth is probably around 10% in that range, maybe a little higher, but not much higher. So you can see that these extra costs are going for, you know, 10% of the students, and so it's not the whole student body. And obviously, you know, this becomes quite a concern. But what one of the most blatant problems is, other than obviously the money, the funding is a blatant problem, but probably even more pronounced than that is the distribution. You know, it's not based upon an actual number of students. You know, XYZ school district, you know, I'm giving you a hypothetical, could have much less than the average across Pennsylvania for special ed students, but based on a formula, they're getting X number of dollars for students, and they don't have that many students, they would have a windfall. Now, I think that the number of districts that are making money on this, that are getting more money than what they actually have to spend, is much less than it started out in back in 1990. So it may be down to just a handful of districts that before there was probably many more. But the grave problem here is the overabundance of school districts that their percentage is much higher than what this formula would be. So they have actually more students that are in special education than they're getting paid for. And so obviously this makes a blatant out of balance and a hardship on that local school district. In many cases, rural school districts, poor rural school districts, or some of your city districts that are economically not healthy, even distressed, probably if you go through a chart, would have a proportionally high number of students. So they have the greatest need and the least ability to pay. So that's why I've been really pushing for not only more money to address the problem, but a more equitable distribution formula to address where the needs are the greatest. And you know, as I see it, it's a state problem here in Harrisburg of not helping enough. But you know, as we just said a moment ago, the federal government, where this all started at, they are grossly underfunding this. I mean, they have dictated to the courts and statute, and they have, you know, they had originally said when they passed the legislation that they would provide 40% of the cost. Well, if we find in reality, you know, 20 years plus after this, that, you know, it's more like probably less than 10% or something. It's, you know, it's blatantly less. So if the federal government would have even come close to meeting their commitment, this would certainly take a lot of pressure off the local property taxpayers in Pennsylvania.
You're listening to Children Come First. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski. We're here today with Representative Jess Stairs, the chair for the House Education Committee from Westmoreland County, and we're talking about education and legislation. Now, let's get a little bit further here while we're talking about formulas and equitable. Do we have an equitable tax distribution in the state of Pennsylvania with regard to school districts? And if we don't, which I don't think we do, are we working towards something? Is there some formula you're trying to devise, or what's happening with regard to that?
Well, that's certainly a question that we could spend the whole time just talking about equity in education. I agree that there's certainly a problem there. As I'm sure our listeners may be aware, we go back a couple years, and we had a court case. I think there's over 200 of our districts that considered poor districts, rural districts primarily, but some of the urban districts united together, and certainly went to our court systems decrying that there's not an equity in the Pennsylvania funding. And the courts, their answer was, we're not going to argue with you that there's not equity. We think there is a problem, but it's not for the courts to resolve, but for the legislature to resolve. So that's where let's stand. And of course, that was appealed by the higher courts, and the Supreme Court agreed with the Commonwealth Court and made that decision then. So my answer is I think that. I know there's inequity, and we have a problem with equity in Pennsylvania. The state in the last 10 years has been struggling with that, and trying to, and I guess probably the best word would be tweak here and tweak there, because it has not resolved it. But basically their attempt has been is to give the poorer districts a greater percentage of new monies. Now, we do have a system in place that, was passed back in the 80s, early 80s, referred to the ESB, which is to stabilize the funding. And, there's like a scale of 1 to 100 referred to as an aid ratio. And if you're conceived to be a poor district, and of course a poor district, would be their ability to generate money based on the property value, and there's a formula in here and taxing and so forth, and these poor districts would have a high aid ratio, and of course on the other side the districts that through the SB formula that are perceived to be wealthy would have a low aid ratio. So that was the attempt back in the 80s to say that if you're a school district that has a high aid ratio, say a 60 or a 70 or so forth, then the state would pick up that amount of money, and the local amount would pick up the 20 or 30%. And of course, if you're a district with a low aid ratio, the state would give you maybe 10. If you had an aid ratio of 10, they'd give you 10%, and then 90% would come locally. So we attempted back in the 80s through the SB formula to do that. Unfortunately, as in any kind of an idea, it may start out and be pretty good. Then next year, there's somebody wants to make a change, so they get an advantage for their district, and somebody wants to make a change here. So it's been amended and changed over the years. I think the intent to equalize the funding, has eroded. And I'm not saying it was perfect to begin with, but it was pretty good. And there was not such a problem, but over the 20-year period, through the changes and so forth, the SB formula is allowing, even though it tries to compensate for the poor districts, it's still allowing them to be, I think, put in an inequitable position and put a hardship on them. So, but the state has been trying to, give a greater percentage to the subsidy formula to the poor districts. And so maybe it's not as bad as it had been, but still I do think that there's a problem. And, I guess the essence of the problem would be, since our schools are funded primarily by property tax, some income, but primarily property, and if a district doesn't have the ability, whether through the assessed value of the property, to raise property tax, no matter what you do locally, you're unable to solve the problem. You have to turn to maybe a statewide taxing system, and some proposals have been to let's fund schools statewide by increasing the state income tax, or let's give the school districts more options using local income, and of course we passed a homestead exemption relief a year or so ago. The results have been only less than a handful of districts have taken up that alternate taxing to put more emphasis on the income and reduce the property tax and give the people a homestead exemption, particularly people in fixed income. So that was a remedy. It I don't think, as we look back on it in the last couple of years, it has been that successful. The next step may be is increasing the state income tax, which compared to other states that have it is low. And of course you have a statewide tax, and of course the money will be collected in Harrisburg and be sent back to the districts. One downside to that, I might add, that certainly it would be more equitable, but many people don't trust Harrisburg. They're saying, well, if we give you Harrisburg the money, then Harrisburg is going to be more dictatorial to us. So there's that phobia, you might say, of giving the money to Harrisburg. But certainly that would be one way to address the equitable, because if a district doesn't have the ability to raise a property tax, an economic not very healthy. It's like we have in Western Pennsylvania, some of the communities or poor districts have no industry or so forth. Then you must put it on the taxpayer. And as we age in Pennsylvania, people becoming fixed incomes, they're at the school board meetings and protesting raising property taxes. So it is a problem.
In all fairness, this is a problem with many states. It's not just Pennsylvania. And I really don't know, in my knowledge, of any state that has really solved this issue of equitable taxing. So, and you've got the second oldest state in the United States with regard to senior citizens. So, each state is different and unique in terms of its problems. And I really don't know of any state that has attempted. But not really solve the problem. Now, we've got about 7 minutes here on our first half hour. You have this new legislation up with regard to report cards for school districts. And from what I gather, this is an attempted legislation to try to get some kind of assessment statewide where you can compare one school to another. Would you talk about that? What was your purpose in doing this, and what are its functions, and give us some aspects of it?
The report card concept is gaining a national interest. A couple of states have initiated a school report card, and that is really telling the, it could be telling the taxpayers, it could be telling the parents, and it's especially it could be telling new people moving into a district information on that school. Now, obviously, you can obtain that now. You can go to your school and you can ask questions, and they'll tell you this and they'll tell you that. And then you go to the next school district and you ask questions, and they'll tell you and so forth. And so if you're moving into a district, you can, compare your notes and to check what one district said and what one other district said. And maybe that may be the deciding location for your new home where you're going to move to, because many people who have children move to a area that they're satisfied with the schools, that they like the schools. That's a a key reason to locate in a certain area. And also, it's I think it's good to know for the public in large. I mean, here this is our district. How do we measure up? How do we compare? And the idea is as I said this morning when this bill passed in committee. The idea is compare apples and apples and oranges, to use kind of a trait term there, because there's a lot of comparisons out there, but sometimes they're either not right in front of you, that you can, you know, look very easily, have reference to, and very easily observe. Or two, you're comparing different type of testing, different type of criteria, and it may be a way to observe, and but it's maybe not as accurate as it should be. It's still not as clear as what it should be. So the intent here is, and credit to our Department of Education, they are beginning to, you know, put out information, particularly on the PSSA test, and information on as they are rating school districts. So this would go a step beyond that, and give a lot of information about the school district, and it would compare a school district to a district of, you know, of comparable demographics and comparable size. So this would let people to get a better picture of if a new school district they're moving to, or let the taxpayers see, they're paying taxes, and every taxpayer pays taxes with hard-earned money. So they want to make sure that they're getting a quality education for the money they're spending. And if indeed in the report card we could see that the districts are maybe falling short of certain standards or certain goals, that then we would be, and to see the neighboring district is doing a good job or a better job at that, this would spur them to get better. And I like to use the word competition, but certainly, when the bar is set higher and other people are reaching that, it behooves us to do better. So I'm hoping to be a healthy competition that would, bring education up to a higher standard. So the intent of this legislation then, as I said, is to let people have a very concise, in-depth overview of their school as they look at other schools, and just to see where they are, and the intent to make them better.
You are listening to Children Come First. We are here today. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski. We are here today with the chair of the House Education Committee, Representative Jess Stairs from Westmoreland County. If you'd like more information about anything that Representative Stairs has been talking about, you can call us toll-free at 1-877-PRO-KIDS. That's 877-PROKIDS. Or you can email us at ProKIDS, ProKIDS at rlc.net. That's ProKids, ProKIDS at rlc.net. Representative Jess Stairs has an office in Harrisburg and one in Westmoreland County if you'd like to reach him there. We'll be joining him again for our second half hour of Children Come First, and right now we'd like to break for our sponsors. Please come back for our second half hour.